Mike, and the Hot.
And we're back. Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I'm your co-host, Mike One. Co-host also, Mike, is here. An Oscar race checkpoint for your ear holes today. We are covering a lot of things, as we always do, Michael. We're going to start with Academy rule changes. We're going to move into some trailers somewhere down the line. We got some movie news. A word that's overused by us, but it's a real smorgasbord.
It's a smorgasbord, or smorgasbord, mm-hmm. or whatever the hell we call it. I forgot the correct pronunciation. Listen, I mean, I'm still just mad at Joel Embiid at this point.
You're going to bring this into the recording, huh?
Yeah, I have to. I mean, we talked about it a little bit in the pre-show, but he literally swept the leg last night, and he didn't get thrown out of the game. They, like, you know, sweep the leg, Danny, and he literally swept the leg, and he hurt one of our big players, and you won't let me be mad at it. It's like I'm not allowed to be upset.
You can
be
mad at it. I'm just allowed to make fun of you for it.
I guess that's fair.
I have to apologize for my friend. He's not used to playing playoff basketball.
My New York Knickerbockers are a team that I'm very proud of. It is like my one sports obsession right now. I got to tell you, I wasn't really into the draft as much as I usually am.
Yeah.
And it was nice to see our Giants do something good with Malik Nabers. I'm not freaking out. I'm not freaking out over football right now. I'm freaking out over basketball. Hoops. That's what matters in my life.
It's a new feeling for you, huh?
It's a new feeling. It's a wonderful feeling. But I can't take it. I can't effing take it. My nerves can't take it. I'm up. I'm down. I'm superstitious as it is. Mm-hmm. And I tell myself I got to drink 4 Guinness a game. Otherwise, we'll lose. I had 5 during the Sixers game. So now I'm telling myself I got to cut back 1.
Well, I have to not speak to you or your brother anymore. We just got a text from your brother, by the way, saying the exact same thing. F Joel Embiid for taking Mitch out for the series.
Yeah. Hey, we come from the same background, I think. And he's right. I agree with him.
Good.
Well, I'm glad we had that to lead off the podcast with. we'll pivot to movie stuff eventually. I'm sure this will not be the last we talk about basketball for this show, though.
It's a sports movie weekend, though. We got Challengers coming out.
That's
right. Is that a sports movie?
With one of the...
I'm going to get away from my sporting event tonight, sneak away, and I'm going to go see that movie, mm-hmm. Challengers, mm-hmm. By myself. Right. So
wearing a long like trench a coat and sunglasses.
Like a pervert.
A duster.
I wasn't expecting to be able to get free because I have to coach tonight, and now I can, and I'm really excited to see Challengers by myself.
She got $10 million for that movie.
Good. She should get that last $20 million night. Yeah. For the next movie after this movie's a hit, I hope.
The over under $15 million for the opening. That's what the projection is. Yeah, I think so too.
Over because of the memeage. The memeage today is brilliant.
Did you just flip a coin like Two-Face?
I was playing with a coin. And it did fall.
All right. Yeah. In terms of stuff we won't be addressing head on today, the movie news that did just break, I haven't dove too deep into the Harvey Weinstein stuff, but in case you haven't heard, the New York Court of Appeals, which is the highest state court in New York, did overturn Harvey Weinstein's 2020 rape conviction, saying that the trial judge erroneously admitted prejudicial testimony of uncharged sexual acts against non-parties as part of the evidence that it was improperly admitted. I haven't dove too deep into this. I haven't put my lawyer hat on for it. I'm not going to get into the weeds on the factual basis. I understand what the judge is saying. I don't know. At first blush, I didn't agree with the application of the law and the interpretation that he's using. And now the more I read about it, the more I think I kind of do. But regardless, what's important to remember is that Harvey Weinstein, this does not make him a free man. He's still in jail as he is convicted in California courts, California cases as well in his past. So the only thing that changes for him is that instead of seeing the inside of a New York jail cell, he will now be seeing the inside of a California jail cell until the New York DA figures out what they want to do as far as retrying or possibly retrying the case
good.
There.
Good. So, good. And yeah, hopefully California throws away the key. But there's more cases pending with him, isn't there?
That I don't know. I mean, I know there's, you know, it depends on what kind of evidence is out there and what kind of evidence the DA, the attorney's offices have. I don't know if they're still waiting on stuff or waiting on witnesses to come forward or if it's all just, you know, I think his California conviction was like a 16-year penalty, 16 years behind bars. Right. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Anyway, speaking of old news, look, these Academy Awards rule changes, there's no way to transition to this, but here we go. But we've talked about these before. We've covered them before. So, like, this is a quick little appetizer. But drive-ins are no longer considered qualifying theaters. That's, like, the newest piece of information that I saw.
Why do you think that is a thing?
That became a thing during the pandemic.
Right.
Where drive-ins were allowed as a qualifying theater in certain markets. Now they are no longer allowed. You have to play at a multiplex or at a movie theater.
Yeah, I just wonder why, like, I mean, it's not like drive-ins are stealing business from multiplexes. Drive-ins are a dying...
Yeah, why can't... You're right. I mean, yeah. Why can't a drive-in be a movie theater?
It's located in the state. It's still a United States movie. Yeah. I don't understand it, but go ahead, yeah.
Otherwise, the expanded theatrical requirement for Best Picture eligibility, that kicks in this year. And essentially, it's this. Like, you got to play 1 week in a major market, a top five market. Dallas-Fort Worth, DFW, was added to those markets of New York, LA, Chicago, and Atlanta. So that's a week there. Then you have to basically play another week in 10 of the top 50 U.S. markets within 45 days of the initial release taking effect. So essentially, you got to have a prolonged release. You got to play widely, and obviously you got to meet two of the four representation and inclusion standards. Those are kind of, you know, lip service at this point, as we've covered in the past. Mm-hmm. That's not nearly enough in terms of representation and inclusion requirements for anybody's.
Right.
Look, if you're going to come out late in the year, you got to submit plans to the Academy. I mean, this is a substantial change that does, I don't know if it hurts Netflix that much, because we've seen Netflix kind of have these medium releases for a couple of weeks anyway, like to the point where the cities in Connecticut are getting these Netflix movies relatively consistently, Michael. So it's not a huge deal, is it?
I don't think so. I mean, the biggest headline to me is that reading these new rules, and it just seems, okay, Mickey 17 seems like it's definitely, there's no way it could be up for Oscars consideration for this upcoming Oscars now. Because even with the expansion plans, so films, like you said at the end there, films with expansion plans after the 10th of January in 2025, they have to have their expansion plans verified and okayed by the Academy, and they have to complete that 1 week run in one of the major markets by the 24th of January. Well, Mickey 17, the Bong Joon-ho movie that's coming out in January, which we can't quite figure out why yet, is definitely going to premiere after that date in South Korea, where it's going to have its worldwide premiere, and then after it premieres in South Korea is when it's going to be rolled out internationally from there. So that's the only thing that I was thinking of, is like, maybe this is some way to, like, maybe Bong Joon-ho or his people knew about this and they were going to try to, like, backdoor Mickey 17 into consideration for this year's Oscars. But it definitely seems like that's not the case. As far as, will it affect Netflix? No, because Netflix has already figured out ways around all this stuff as it is, buying theaters and, like you said, playing limited runs in other markets and stuff like that. So I think it should be business as normal.
It seems like it. Otherwise, they did tweak some other rules. Animated features selected by countries for international feature will now be automatically eligible in the animated feature category. So international animated features are just like in that mix there now. Original score, we have a short list that has expanded to a bit of a long list, 15 to 20. I think a long list was 20 for us, right? That's the official Mike and Oscar list size rubric. 20 equals long list. 15 or below equals short list.
5 minutes is a bad standing ovation. 501 is a good standing
ovation. That's right.
Ovation. Yeah.
That's right. So that's with original score, but I'm glad for that. We expanded that.
Yeah.
There have been some rough snubs an original score in recent years. Plus, you're allowed to have three people get trophies No longer will there be a awkward.
I can't believe that was
on
a thing.
Stage.
Yeah,
yeah.
You only hand out one trophy for formally, but now you can get up to three. Okay.
Thanks. Otherwise, we have writers. They must now submit a final shooting script in the screenplay category. So Scott Feinberg made a funny joke about what the fuck is Mike Lee going to do? someone's just going to have to transcribe what these actors are saying on set because they're making it up as they go along. But yeah, the final cut there. But yeah, I don't think any of these are major changes, some campaigning tweaks, some special awards / honorary Oscar tweaks of name. And, you know, I kind of just was reminded that they have all of these, you know, traditional honorary awards that they give out when they feel it's meaningful and it's merited. So that's kind of what these do every year. They remind me to look over the rules.
Yeah, nothing major in terms of, like, are we going to suspend Will Smith for life? Which is past controversies we've had in past Oscar changes we've had to deal with at this time of year. But no, this is all more formality stuff, it looks like.
Or what was the other thing? The email, we couldn't go to parties at whose house? The Friends could no longer hold watch parties during Oscar season.
Can't go to Courtney Cox. She's not
Courtney
allowed
Cox.
To. Yeah.
She's not allowed to email anybody during Oscar season. That was a previous rule that we covered.
Right.
And I just want to remind everybody of that. So, all right, we'll talk about some future Oscar movie news we hope, or in this case, it'll never happen because Quentin Tarantino has scrapped The Movie Critic. He was set to shoot for like a day to qualify for a tax rebate and then basically start shooting heavily in 2025. There wasn't an official attached distributor, but we heard that Sony would have been in the mix there, even though I think they should have been on board. Like, shouldn't they have been attached? Shouldn't they have been financing it? That make sense to me.
I guess they kind of wanted to see what it was first before, like, make sure it was a real movie before they committed their finances.
We're going to read movie reviews at a porn theater. We're going to sell this for $300 million.
Yeah. Here's $150 million, Quentin. You've done it again.
Brad Pitt was scheduled to join the film, reprising his role as Cliff Booth, the stuntman character he played in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Now, my first blush at this information was Brad Pitt's name has been, you know, having a tough time in the TMZ, and Angelina Jolie keeps accusing him of being just a horrible person.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, like, was Tarantino backing off this because he made a Cliff Booth movie in this, like, somewhat sequel to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and then he's like, I can't be in the Cliff Booth business? Or was this... I mean, listen, the last movie he made was about the Manson murders. The movie before that was about World War II, right? I mean... Or what movie did he make before that? But whatever. He's taken on and he's tackled major subject matter and huge genres. Did you really want him to finish talking about the porn industry film critics that you read? That didn't seem cinematic to me, even though, yeah, I was happy that Paul Walter Hauser was attached. I didn't get into the whole... You know, Sean Fennessy, I want a Tarantino movie about movie critics. I was, like, bummed out every stage of this rollout for Tarantino's 10th film. I was like, number one, it's his 11th. Stop it.
Yep.
But agreed. Number two, it's like, what are we doing? Like, what is he doing? Why?
He hasn't gone past the point of no return for you? Like, I was in for this. I was like, okay, yeah, porno mag, film criticism, sure, why not? It's Tarantino. I mean, he's bought enough cachet and goodwill that... he's going to have to prove that he makes a flop before I start doubting any premise he throws out there.
It's just a woman stepping on grapes or some whatever that freak considers pornography. It's like, yeah, I wasn't in for it. No, I didn't want to watch it. I mean, even though I was like, of course I would, because I'm not a pervert, but I would watch it and be a little squeamish. I was not happy about it.
Some news from around the internet about the scrapping of this. Paul Walter Hauser took to his personal Instagram to say that the reported rumors, which circled months ago attaching him to the lead role in this movie, were fake news. He said he only met Quentin Tarantino once years ago at a CAA party, the agency party, and has barely ever spoken to him, but that Quentin Tarantino himself and Reservoir Dogs specifically are some of the reasons that Hauser wanted to work in the entertainment and film industry as it is. He'd be honored to work with Quentin Tarantino any day. Like you said, Sony was not officially attached, but they were poised to support whatever Quentin Tarantino project does come, as there seems to be a kinship forming between Tarantino and Sony CEO and chairman Tom Rothman. Quentin, I guess, reportedly sees him in kind of the same light, the same kind of relationship that he and Mr. Weinstein had once upon a time before, you know, the rape thing. Tom Cruise was rumored to be attached to this at one point. Those were also poppycock, I guess. The Tom Cruise and Quentin Tarantino had never met regarding this movie. Pitt was signed on, and then he signed on, it was later revealed, to reprise his role as Cliff Booth from Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Now, there's some haziness as to whether he was to fit within this porno mag film critic story, or if the entire project had since evolved and changed to become more of a straight line Once Upon a Time in Hollywood sequel or spinoff. But it did seem that Pitt was going to be Cliff Booth. But in terms of, like, officially what's going on with this project, the California Film Commission has been in touch with Tarantino's camp. They still mark this project as open and ongoing within their files, and this is on the heels of the commission having granted $20 million to Tarantino's production company earlier in the year to film within the state of California itself. So while this may be scrapped, maybe he did quickly pivot to something else and still has a movie idea in mind. I don't know, or maybe they're just late in, you know, their clerical work there in the California Film Commission. That remains to be seen. Do I think that this being killed had anything to do with the recent Pitt headlines? I don't necessarily really think so. I mean, Tarantino seems to be staunchly in Pitt's camp. He's worked with him a couple times already. He seems to have an affinity for the guy. I think this is just more like, you disagree.
I just, you know, you probably should back away from Brad Pitt at the moment. Because these are horrible accusations happening.
I don't disagree. It's just that, again, like we've talked about, like the guy just seems to just walk away from all of them. They've been going on for 2 years now.
We just covered the Weinstein situation again, like briefly today, and Tarantino was, I mean, he was involved in that production company. He was involved with Miramax, obviously, his whole career. So why would he even go near a guy who's that subject matter plus, I never understood it. Like, it was just pushing it.
I mean, there seriously is a history with Tarantino of just pivoting away from projects just in general. Like, he's done this for a couple decades. Sometimes he wants to write a war novel and he ends up filming Django Unchained. Sometimes he wants to direct a Star Trek movie and instead he enters production for, you know, the porno mag film critic movie. So the guy does go from one project to another and has been, like, I think it was the Hollywood Reporter even said, like, he's been deep in projects before and has just pivoted away to just do something completely different as is. So he does have that history attached to him as well.
All right. I'm hoping he just thought of it and it's like, nah, this is not up to my standard and I'm gonna pivot out of it. And I hope he did think of, hey, I'm not going to do a sequel about Cliff Booth.
Yeah.
Because this guy is, he's toxic right now. I'm just not going to do it. I hope he thought about those things. I hope he's growing. I don't know. Talk about some flaky filmmakers, and like you're going to mention here, Martin Scorsese is circling a Frank Sinatra biopic with Leonardo DiCaprio as Frank and Jennifer Lawrence as Frank Sinatra wife Ava Gardner, and this will happen after his Life of Jesus adaptation, Scorsese. But Scorsese's also known for being a little finicky in the projects he tackles, Michael.
Isn't this the third or fourth time we've heard of Scorsese and Leo teaming up for something that we've never seen and might get abandoned? Like, I don't know if we can trust any time Scorsese and Leo say they're in for something, because this has happened a couple times since we've been doing MMO, but okay, fine, let's say this movie is going to happen, there is still kind of a hefty roadblock in the way which needs to be overcome for this movie to even start production in the first place. So DiCaprio is tagged to play Old Blue Eyes. Jennifer Lawrence, like you said, is Ava Gardner. Those two were married in the 50s for like 6 or 7 years. There's a slight problem in that Gardner originally broke up Frank Sinatra's previous marriage to Nancy Barbato. Sinatra was married to Barbato since 1939. I think they divorced in 51. And the daughter of that marriage is currently the executor of Frank Sinatra's estate and likeness. So she would need to okay, Tina Sinatra would need to okay a film being made centered around her father and the woman responsible reportedly for breaking up her father's marriage to her mother.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's something called a lot of money, Michael.
Right. That could, I mean, there is that. And Tina Sinatra is a producer in her own right. And she was, you know, she had a hand in the Manchurian Candidate remake. She was a part of that. So she is familiar with the film industry. And I'm not saying it's something that's, you know, impossible to overcome with the type of money and stars marketed. And I'm sure she would get a producer credit on this as well. But, you know, if my parents broke up... And the big Hollywood machine came to me and was like, look, we really want to, like, position this movie as an Oscars baity type thing. And everybody involved in it is going to be people from your real life, except your mom. I don't know.
Well, I mean, everybody has their price. But, yeah, I don't know Nancy Barbato at all. So I don't know if she has a price. Yeah. We'll have to wait and see how this shakes out. I don't love Leo as Old Blue Eyes here. He's 6 feet tall. Frank Sinatra was 5'8", which is bullshit. He was probably 5'4", based on, you know, Frank Sinatra's height, right? So what are we talking about here? Like, how does that make any sense?
You think Bradley Cooper is just foaming at the mouth to take this role over?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he is. Yeah. But he's too tall, too.
Well, who do you want to do it? Patton Oswalt?
I don't know. Nobody could be Frank to say something about Frank Sinatra. I don't know who can, you know, handle the role of Frank Sinatra. That's an incredible role.
Tom Cruise, maybe? That'd be something.
But you got to be able to sing. I mean, we saw Leo in The Green Door. Behind the green door.
That movie was the best picture of that year.
I need to rewatch it again. I'm just getting a
sick. When's the last time you said that about Parasite?
Every time I go onto Hulu, I want to rewatch it again. I want to rewatch Parasite again, too. I've rewatched it a couple times. I do. I have it on all my, what do you call them? My cues. Yeah. Anyway, we'll move on.
Megalopolis, the much talked about and discussed picture from Francis Ford Coppola. It seems like it has some distribution for France, at least, and might be more hurdles in its way for stateside exhibition. No, Mike?
Yeah, Variety reported on Francis Ford Coppola and producers that they are seeking a marketing budget of half the film's $120 million overall budget, production budget there. So, I mean, I don't think that's out of the ordinary, but the fact that he's demanding such a thing after self-financing it has been kind of a deal breaker for a lot of people. They're also demanding the producers half the revenues, and that's even happening in France. So on the one hand, this is showing some red flags for why this may be a tough sell for American distributors. But on the other hand, it's also tipping that Megalopolis, like I was saying, Michael, I don't think it's going to Netflix after they kind of jumped on the Cannes bandwagon there, because Netflix has famously been at odds with the French Film Commission and will not exhibit any of their Netflix films at Cannes because they will not fulfill the French Film Commission's exclusive windowing requirements. And doesn't seem like they've made any progress, especially after the episode I did with Andrew there. So it is noted in the Elsa Kislasi article here that although Amazon and Apple could still be in the running, Megalopolis is unlikely, almost definitively not going to be going to Netflix.
Okay.
What say you?
I think any type of deal that it does find is going to be the type of deal that it seems like he might be dragging his feet over anyway, where the distributor is going to end up needing like a hefty percentage of the revenue, which kind of sucks if you're Francis Ford Coppola and self-finance this movie to the tune of $100 million plus of your own money.
Right.
Where the, I mean, you're going to have no shot at recouping even half of that if that's the deal that you get into with a distributor.
Right, right. So that does suck. And I do feel for him there. But I mean, I think he's trying to get the movie its presentation as well, because I mean, at his age, he's probably almost like, screw it. I mean, I did this because I had to do it.
Right.
I wanted to do it. He's made those gambles before. But yeah, I think Can is going to be either Medellin or it's going to be Killers of the Flower Moon for Megalopolis. I don't know which. And I'm curious, because if it's something towards Killers of the Flower Moon, then like Amazon or Apple, they are willing to go the distribution route. They're willing to bring Paramount or Sony on board.
Sure.
And help them put it in theaters first, and then it's worth something to them to have it on the service. And maybe they buy it out in perpetuity, like the Air deals and et cetera. And, or maybe they don't. Maybe Francis Ford Coppola's family is selling Megalopolis for the next 50 years on Voodoo. Or now Fandango at Home. I don't know.
Voodoo, the home of Megalopolis.
I don't know, Michael. But it's not a great sign, but it's better than nothing. Like, somebody's getting in the Francis Ford Coppola business, Le Pact.
Yeah. It's going to find a home, right? Like, don't you feel comfortable in saying that, at least?
I don't know.
You think this thing's just going to go by the wayside? So you really think it has a chance to go the voodoo route in 10 years?
I mean, think about it. Couldn't you see like AMC doing a deal with him at some point where it's just a very favorable deal for Francis Ford Coppola, but AMC just gets a piece, and you know, it's really a no lose deal for AMC other than the screens it takes up, and then it comes out in August, and
I could see that. Sure. I mean, I don't think this is gonna. I think this ends up in theaters at some point.
Yeah.
Or it ends up in front of eyeballs, at least, is what I'll say.
I hope so. I hope so. Yeah. I believe so as well.
Keanu Reeves, he's going to team up with Ruben Östlin for The Entertainment System Is Down. I believe this is a Home Star Runner movie.
No, this is a hijacking movie, an airplane hijacking movie. And if John Wick is your pilot, which I'm guessing, I have no idea. Maybe he's one of the hijackers. Either way, John Wick is in the film because he just played John Wick, so he's John Wick. So how does he not immediately beat everybody up on the plane? How is this not just like one guy sitting with a bunch of mangled carcasses?
Carcasses,
I don't know. Yeah. How he's John Wick. Like, this movie, Ruben, you can't cast him because he's John Wick. Can you? I don't understand why he wouldn't immediately beat up the hijackers.
Well, one theory I'm going to throw out there is that perhaps he's playing a different character.
But he's John Wick.
It's going to be a tough sell if he's like there with his John Wick look, with like the shoulder length bob and the mustache and the beard. He does need to change his physical look if he's going to be somebody who like can't take on hijackers. I agree with you there.
Once you get to John Wick 4 and every John Wick is 3 hours before that, look, you're John Wick.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to counter program for a while before you're not John Wick.
And thinking about it, there's no, even changing his appearance won't work, because either you look like John Wick and you're John Wick, or you look like the guy from Speed and you know how to handle a large vehicle when it's going out of control. So anyway, you know, so there's no version of Keanu Reeves in which we wouldn't have full faith and confidence that he's going to land that plane safely.
Yeah. I mean, part of the reason he had to take.
Okay, so what you heard that snap at the end there. I've left that in real time. That was also Mike getting cut off. He lost power where he was mid-sentence, mid-episode. And in real time now, it's been probably about 45 minutes of us trying to figure out exactly what to do, what we can do, what our options are, and how we were going to go forward and proceed with this recording and finish up this episode for you. As we've mentioned a lot of times before on the show, Mike and I have the technological wizardry of like two monkeys trying to like make a telephone out of a coconut, for lack of a better term, without using curse words. So we're not the most adept people when it comes to technology, but we do have limited knowledge, and whatever we tried just wasn't working. So here's what's going to happen for the remainder of this ORC episode. You're stuck with me, dear listener, and I'm sorry in advance for that. But yeah, it's going to be Mike One taking you the rest of the way. Only a couple more stories that we're going to hit on and wrap up here anyway, and we will give you your regular dose of MMO programming next week. But this is a properly ridiculous ending to the one episode week that Mike and I had in store for you anyway, because I was out of state for half the week, and Mike had a very, very packed and busy schedule for more than half the week. So we were desperately trying to get this one in and give you one high quality one MMO quality episode for you to have to listen to for the weekend anyway, at least. But now you get this instead. So without further ado, we'll go right into talking about some of the Oscar trailers here that we have, and then we'll wrap up with a quick box office report segment. Mike had a couple of reviews. Maybe he'll hit on those in a future episode, and I can tease those for you. But you heard about the Keanu story. Let's talk about the trailers that we had, the contender trailers, and we'll start with Deadpool and Wolverine giving us our first full trailer. I'm sure you guys saw it. This has millions upon millions of views already online throughout various internet outlets on YouTube. What I wanted to talk about was the Easter eggs and what we saw within this trailer itself. I mean, we have a lot of things that are kind of shoved in our face to let us know this is definitely a Marvel Deadpool movie and no longer a Fox / X-Men only Deadpool movie, Wolverine movie. This is fully fledged within the MCU, and because of that, we have Ant-Man's giant helmet, we have Deadpool and Wolverine jumping into what definitely looks like a Doctor Strange type portal in this trailer as well. The fight on the beach between Deadpool and Wolverine has the exact same choreography as one of the first fights in Marvel cinematic history, even pre-MCU. I'm talking about the Peter Parker Flash, whatever his name is, fight in the hallway by the lockers in the first Sam Raimi, Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. I think it was comicbook.net or comicbook.com. Point was one of the first ones I saw point that out, but it's the exact same choreo. Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman are doing the same choreo in this fight between Deadpool and Wolverine in this trailer as was in the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man movie. I thought that was kind of cool and definitely an homage and a nod to previous Marvel movies pre-MCU formation. We also get our first look of Emma Corrin as Cassandra Nova, supposedly going to be the big bad in this. She's playing the evil twin sister of Charles Xavier, which is what Cassandra Nova is. This was all set to Madonna's Like a Prayer. There was also a report that just came out. I mean, this movie could be filled with all sort. You thought Spider-Man, No Way Home or Far From Home, whatever the last Spider-Man movie was, had all the Easter eggs in for you and was pure fan service and entertainment. This could be a whole new barrage of fan service, or maybe not, but there was a report that came out today that said Wesley Snipes is primed to reprise his MCU, his role as Blade for the MCU. Blade was obviously not an MCU character. Mahershala Ali is supposedly bringing that character back for his own version of it at some point in the future, even though that's had a messy production, and we've talked about that a few times on this show. But Wesley Snipes is going to be Blade in the MCU. We don't know when or where, but that was a report that came out today that I saw. Doesn't necessarily mean it'll be in Deadpool and Wolverine, but there is so much stuff packed into this trailer of Deadpool and Wolverine. I'm very excited for it. You got one of the payoffs of the shot here was both Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds separately saying, let's fucking go. Yeah, let's fucking go indeed. I mean, I'm hyped for this movie. I did a little math just for fun. Just I wanted to kind of break down kind of the momentous occasion that this movie may be. Look, we know that according to director Sean Levy, this is not the third Deadpool movie. This is not Deadpool 3. Okay, fine. Let's say this is a Deadpool trilogy, though, between Deadpool 1, Deadpool 2, and now Deadpool and Wolverine. Here's some of the records it's up against. The highest grossing R-rated movie domestically all time is Passion of the Christ. $370.78 million for Passion of the Christ beat Deadpool 1's rake domestically by about $7 million. The highest grossing R-rated movie of all time worldwide is Joker's $1.078 billion. I truly think, and I think Mike's on board with me in saying this, I truly think this movie, Deadpool and Wolverine, has a shot at breaking both of those records. And if you take this movie as a trilogy, right? If you take Deadpool, Deadpool 2, and this movie now is the third in this trilogy, if this movie does hit $1 billion, the Deadpool trilogy will have made $2.567 billion. That would be good for the third highest grossing trilogy of all time, beating out Sam Raimi's OG Spidey trilogy, and only behind, I guess it would be the fourth highest grossing trilogy of all time. It would only be behind the two Hobbit trilogies that we've had, Lord of the Ring and the Hobbit trilogy, and the Star Wars trilogy featuring Kylo Ren, the sequel trilogy, as it were. So high stakes for this movie. I'm so amped to see this. I think everyone is, and that's why I do think this is going to like shatter the box office. But the Easter eggs, this could be a total reset for the MCU. Remains to be seen. We'll see what happens. It's gotten a lot of hype already. It's gotten a lot of people talking about it. It's got Kevin Feige dropping F-bombs at CinemaCon. So a lot to be expected, and we'll see how the MCU pays off its first foray into the Deadpool IP. Another trailer we had was Trap. This from M. Night Shyamalan. A father and his teen daughter attend a pop concert only to realize they've entered the center of a dark and sinister event. So this was another trailer that kind of, and you know, God bless M. Night Shyamalan. The guy just should be cutting trailers for everybody, whether it's his movie, whether it's his daughter's movie. He knows, whoever he entrusts to cut his trailers for him, they do a hell of a job, or he does a hell of a job. But look, I am so grateful. This is the Josh Hartnett. He takes his young daughter to see this pop concert. There's cops and police and SWAT teams all surrounding the stadium throughout this trailer, and he's trying to figure out why, and he asks somebody at one of the concession stands or one of the merchandising stands what's going on, and there's a serial killer that's on the loose, and there's intel that the serial killer is going to be at the concert, and this was all a trap set by the police and the higher-ups to catch this serial killer, and we the rest of the trailer is us finding out that Josh Hartnett seems to be the serial killer, but it's an M. Night Shyamalan movie, so who knows what that means. Look, if this is 2012, right, the reveal of Josh Hartnett maybe being, or at least having sinister intent, or maybe totally being this serial killer that's being on the manhunt for, is not given away. That's the twist of the movie if this is like 2012 Shyamalan. So I'm hoping there's some signs of progress. Like, thank God that Josh Hartnett being fingered as the serial killer himself is not the big twist of this movie, or at least was hinted at heavily in this trailer. Because I think if you just position this trailer as if it were to come out in 2012 or 2014, everybody and their mother would go into the theater thinking that, oh, well, Josh Hartnett, he's the murderer, he's the killer. And they'd be right. So that being given away in this trailer, I think, is very smart. Now, it does create a problem. And that problem is now that that's been given away. I have seen everybody online talk. Well, clearly the twist now is that the daughter is either actually the killer and Hartnett is covering for her, or it's some sort of father daughter killer team up thing. And like, yeah, that's my guess too. But whether that's right or not, what's most interesting to me is the idea that you have this auteur who has, I mean, he's seen the highest highs in Shyamalan and the lowest lows, all on the backs of scripts and films, which we all know now going into it will get big twist endings. And that's how he's made his mark on the industry. So the progression of the public discourse around Shyamalan is really something that I've been fascinated with for a little bit, because it's kind of a lesson in audience evolution, if you think about it, to a consistent message or a consistent medium. Shyamalan first comes on the scene, right? We don't know what we're getting. And we get great twists, all-timer twists, cinematic, Hall of Fame-worthy, legendary twists. And those are followed up by some not-so-great twists, right? I mean, that's the ebb and flow of the Shyamalan career. And then we settle in with him, and we know we're getting twists and twist endings. And that's kind of become the trademark and the hallmark of his over these 30 years. So now we're 30 years into his career, and we're in this meta postmodern point where we aren't allowing ourselves just to sit back and wait to see what the twist is. It's more, we have to think we know what the twist is ahead of time, and if we as the audience come up with a better twist than what we eventually see on screen, we'll be wildly disappointed. And to me, that is just, I mean, what other auteur has to deal with that? I don't know how Shyamalan wins anymore in the movie he makes, and maybe it doesn't matter to him whether or not he wins in that regard, so long as the checks keep getting cashed, and so long as he's keep getting like budgets, big budgets, comparatively, to make these movies with. Maybe that's all that matters to him. I don't know. But like, as far as audience satisfaction, I can't think of an auteur who's got a higher degree of difficulty in terms of satisfying an audience with one aspect of his filmmaking than Shyamalan is being held up to with a twist ending, and the twist ending he has to pull off in his movie. And that's going to be completely what he's judged by anymore, for the most part, anyway. I mean, I know that last movie of his, the dialogue was also what he was judged by, along with the twist, the one on the beach, Old, because, boy, that was some dialogue. And boy, that was a twist. Neither were good. That said, that was a good trailer. I think this is a well-cut trailer, and I think Shyamalan just knows how to cut trailers. And speaking of Shyamalans and trailers, we have the second trailer for The Watchers, which is done by a Shyamalan, but not M. Night. So this is an interesting one. We're kind of getting the stress of a 10 Cloverfield Lane, the whole, you know, do these monsters actually exist out there, or is this just a bunch of people who are crazy because you're not allowed to see the big bad, you're not allowed to see the monsters, mixed in with the intensity of, like, A Quiet Place monsters, in that once you see them, if you do see them, nobody who has seen them has lived. So you're faced up against this duality of, like, you have to be careful and respect the monster's rules, and if you follow their rules, they allow you to live. But are they really real? Well, no one knows, because anyone who's ever seen the monsters in person and alive has been killed by them. So I am sure we're in for a twist ending here. I didn't dislike this trailer. I think it's got certainly a cool premise. But again, if a Shyamalan movie is having a trailer cut for it, I'm a sucker and I'm going to be in and go to the theater. Probably be disappointed. I hope that's not the case. We will see. It remains to be seen. Blink Twice. This is Zoe Kravitz's directorial debut. We had our first trailer for that as well. So just as a means of recap here, this is Channing Tatum playing a playboy billionaire who kind of has this fantasy island type sinister undercurrent to him, where he invites a bunch of people to his magical island and they're treated to all kinds of fine food and wine and dancing. And then, one of the innocent girls goes missing. And he has something to do with it, or does he? We don't know. Oh, it's going to be another twist. If you're keeping score at home, in terms of my digestion of trailers lately, Channing Tatum as a woebegone, lovelorn, reserved NASA scientist? No. No, no, no. How that movie's not called Failure to Launch, I'll never know, but regardless. But Channing Tatum as a master of puppets, Edward Norton in the second Knives Out with an edge type of millionaire playboy harboring dark secrets? I don't mind that. He looked kind of capable and cool and suave and sinister in this character, and it definitely pulled me in. I thought this was a good batch of trailers, and that's definitely one of them. The Long Legs trailer, the second teaser, I'm going to hold off on because I want to talk about it with Mike. Suffice to say, I'm excited for that movie, obviously. And I think this was as good a batch of trailers as we've had lately, especially with my cynical and just downright pessimistic self lately with how I felt about trailers in general. I've been, Tori Amos would say I've been a bad, bad girl. But then again, I think she said that in 2002 or 2003, and that's the timeline that I am stuck in, and we all know this by now. Let's talk about box office update and just recap. Another big weekend for Civil War. Its second weekend at the top of the box office. It brings in another $11 million. Back-to-back first place finishes at the domestic box office for it. It's up to about $50 million worldwide or so. It had a rumored $50 million budget. I don't know that it's going to be a big moneymaker. It'll be a moneymaker on the secondary, on the second run secondary market, PVOD market, certainly. By the time it gets there, it may not be profitable in theaters, but nonetheless, this is A24's, I think, biggest movie of all time, and they have to be extremely, extremely happy. I'm sorry, I misread that. Variety saying that Civil War crossed the $70 million worldwide box office mark on Tuesday, so maybe it does have a fighting chance. Still, it has to get to what, on a $50 million budget, if that number's to be believed, 2.5 times that, at least on old school mathematics, means it has to make $125 million worldwide. Probably will get there in terms of profitability. I don't know. It's going to be a tough battle, but like I said, certainly by the time it gets to the secondary market, it'll be profitable. And all A24 cares about is that it's making the money it is, and that it's at top of the box office, and it's causing the shift in the tremor in the zeitgeist that type of movie, and that movie specifically, has been doing in its weeks out. Civil War, Mike reviewed it for us, I think, last week. It's definitely something that I'm interested in seeing still. I'm going to wait for it to come on PVOD before I dive into it. But yeah, back-to-back weeks at the box office. Good for A24, good for Civil War. Abigail, number two at the box office, brought in $10.2 million. It's up to $17.7 million worldwide. This has had the kinds of reviews that I think you would expect from the previews and the movies of it. The Radio Silence venture, their first venture out of the Scream fiasco, as it were. Melissa Barrera obviously starring in this. Mike saw it. He was happy with it. If he wants to give a deep review about it, I'm not going to read his copy, but he does have a review written out here, and I'll leave it up to him to fill you in on what he thought about it more. But he seemed to be generally positive about it overall in terms of meeting his expectations, and I think that's kind of what this movie is. This movie's probably going to give you the fulfill your expectations of what you saw off the trailer. That's kind of the vibe I've gotten anyway from most people on film Twitter that I've read the reviews of for. So again, I think you have to mark that down as a success. We'll see if it reaches profitability in and of itself. Just the means of wrapping up here. Godzilla and Kong hung around third. It's up to almost $500 million worldwide, which I would think has to be a win for that. The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare debuts to an $8.9 million mark. Probably not great, considering its budget is $60 million. Going to be tough to see it get to profitability there. Mike did see that as well. He did see Sasquatch Sunset, which I know he was very, very excited to see. I'll let him fill you in on his review for that as well, but he was not crazy about the whole Sasquatch Sunset thing and how it was pulled off, which I know is extra disheartening because we had a couple listeners reach out to us and talk about how great they thought it was. That is a movie I probably will never see. You know what can get me to watch Sasquatch Sunset? If it picks up Oscars momentum in this type of year where it seems like the Oscars race is totally up for a free-for-all and anybody's guess and any kind of movie can get momentum and drag in. If Jesse Eisenberg and Riley Keough campaign for Sasquatch Sunset completely in the Sasquatch outfits, like they do the Vanity Fair, the Variety Loop, or the YouTube videos, like they go on Hot Ones, but they're in character, maybe not even in character, maybe they just talk as Jesse and Riley, but wearing all the Sasquatch makeup, then I'll be into watch Sasquatch Sunset. Otherwise, I don't know. You know, I have to respect the hustle at that point, wouldn't I? Probably. But short of that, I don't know that that's a movie that I would necessarily be in for. That is your rundown for the most part. That is your Oscar race checkpoint, a kind of truncated, expedited second half there. Again, our apologies for the technical difficulties. We should have those totally figured out by the time we come to you next week with our next episodes. I'm apologizing on behalf of myself, on behalf of also Mike as well, but we thank you for sticking it out with us through this episode. As always, dear listener, what does matter most to us are your thoughts, comments, questions, or concerns about anything we talked about in this episode or anything we do here at large in the MMO Empire. As always, you can leave us those on our social media, as we are Mike and Oscar on Facebook and Instagram, at MM and Oscar on Twitter or X, Mike and Oscar at gmail.com, and on Reddit. We are available wherever you do hear podcasts, and if you're listening to us on either the Apple Podcasts or Spotify app, if you wouldn't mind leaving us a 5-star review, those help us out immensely. Thank you to everyone. I mean, you could leave us those out of pity, too, for this episode and dealing with the technical difficulties we have. I wouldn't mind. Just say, hey, guys, good job with the technical difficulties. 5 stars. These are guys I wouldn't trust to replace any wires in my house. But maybe they're good for office morale when the power goes out, and that means something to me in this day and age. you can leave us those on Apple or Spotify. As for what's coming next from MMO, we should be back to normal next week. I think we have another Oscar race checkpoint. We have some more news we want to hit on next. And then we will be getting back to, hopefully at the end of next week, I think we talked about the 100% accurate, way too early Oscars predictions. Those will finally be coming out for us. We can tell you who's definitely going to win Oscars next March. Well ahead of time. Hopefully it can give you some time and some runway to get your bets in, maybe make yourself a little profitability there by listening to us. As always, we are 100% accurate. The further out we are from the Oscars, the more accurate we are with our predictions. The closer we get, well, I don't have to tell you. All you have to do is go back and listen to our Oscars recap episode to hear how we did with our official predictions this year. In a word, not great, Bob. As always, dear listener, our thanks to you checking us out, giving us your time of day. When reality sucks, you can hopefully stay online and with power with us, but, you know, there's just no guarantees. So maybe you can just weather the power outages with us. We are Mike, and Oscar, trying to make award season year-round without the stuffiness. We will see you all very soon. Thanks for listening.